Americans Policy Radio, offering a unique perspective on everything. Geopolitics, culture creation, the reality of the world we live in. Coming to you live from New York City, your host, Pierce Redmond.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Porkins Policy Radio. As always, I am your host, Pierce Redmond, and you can find this show here at American Freedom Radio, AmericanFreedomRadio.com, as well as on my website, PorkinsPolicyReview.com, and you can also hear the rebroadcast of this later on in the week on Friday nights from 11 to 1 a.m. on a variety of stations, so lots of different ways to listen to the show. I am working on getting iTunes up and running, so I'll have more updates on that, let you know when you can listen to the show on iTunes as well. But very excited about my guest today, somebody who faithful listeners will remember from episode 48, and that is Aaron Smith Levin, of course, the man behind the Growing Up in Scientology YouTube channel, and just tons and tons of stuff about Scientology, exposing all of the sort of nasty things. But anyway, Aaron, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad we finally get to be talking. We had so much trouble with both of our schedules trying to figure things out. But I'm very excited to have you on. As I said again, Aaron was on the show back, episode 48, of the then podcast. But this is your first time on the radio show, so very exciting. And Aaron, just before we kind of dive in, it's everything. Lots of new listeners, joining the show all the time. So, tell everybody a little bit about yourself. Who is Aaron Smith Levin?
All right. So I, let's see what's important. I guess what's most relevant is that I was, practically born into Scientology. Mm-hmm. And then I actually left school and started working for the Church of Scientology when I was, 12 years old. And, with my twin brother and my mother and some other family members and friends, all joined staff for Scientology at the same time. Fast forward to, joining the Sea Org and then leaving the Sea Org when I was 26 in 2006. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward a little bit later, end up being declared or labeled a suppressive person and kind of kicked out of Scientology only about, 3 to 4 years ago now. I lose track. And so then I was in episode 6 of Leah Remini's Scientology, the Aftermath show. And so that's how some people know me. And then I have the Growing Up in Scientology YouTube channel that I started about a year and a half or 2 years ago. And some people might be familiar with that channel. That's pretty much the relevant story of who I am.
Yeah. And again, if people want a little bit more background on Aaron's particular story of how his time within Scientology and getting kicked out and all the sort of nutty things that happen, they can go back and listen to episode 48, because Aaron gets into a lot of detail about his time there and the whole process of growing up in Scientology. Again, too, people should definitely check out Aaron's YouTube channel, Growing Up in Scientology, because it's a fascinating series of videos that you've been doing, many of them with Mike Rinder, who people will hopefully be familiar with. And it's a fascinating topic because there aren't a lot of people that talk about the phenomenon of growing up within the church.
Well,
you
know, right.
Not having any sort of outside, forces or anything, just sort of, it's an interesting perspective when you're just talking about, when you're like a little kid, this is what it is. You know, you're just, L. Ron Hubbard and Satans and all these things just are, part of everyday life. But I did want to have Aaron on to discuss some of the, recent, big stories in Scientology, and particularly Leah Remini's show, which I would, again, encourage everybody to go out and watch if they have not. Excellent, excellent show. Very well done. As you said, Aaron is in the show. Mike Rinder. Lots of, well-known former Scientologists. Aaron, what exactly was your role in the show? Talk a little bit about what you did and what your episode was about.
So let's see, because Mike and I, Mike Rinder and I, we work together in my business outside of anything to do with this television show, right? So because of that, is kind of how, but because Mike and I have a close working relationship, is how I was sort of able to be involved in the show or to know what was happening with the show, from the very early stages, like when it was still being discussed. And I think that's also how I had an opportunity to become involved in the show. Cause there's many, many, many people out there who, I think are chomping at the bit to tell their story publicly and contribute to the public conversation that's happening. I think the reason I was able to be involved in season one is because I did have this and do have this connection and relationship with Mike, right? Mm. So, you know, Mike and I have spent dozens and dozens and dozens of hours having very interesting conversations about Scientology in general. That's part of why I started doing the interviews with him on my YouTube channel, is we'd have a conversation and be like, that was a really fantastic conversation. Mm. We should put that on video. Mm. And Mike already knew what happened with my brother and what happened with me and my family and my mom and everything. And so, you know, he and I had already had this conversation and he already knew that story. So when it came time to line up which episodes and stories were going to be featured in season one, it was just kind of just included in there. So, when you say, what was my role? My role was really just appearing on camera and talking. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that I hope people will find interesting about this show, there is, when I say there's no script, like, not only is there no script, there's not even an outline. You know, there's not even takes. There's not like, okay, everybody, we're going to roll and we're going to discuss this. Like, it's literally, I didn't even meet Leah until she had pulled up into my driveway and the cameras were rolling and I went outside to meet her for the first time. Like, there, this is so far from staged. It's truly reality television. Mm. So, you know, I think I had probably had conversations in advance with the production company, giving them, you know, their, telling them the story for the first time. And so, you know, I think they had told me, like, look, out of your entire story, I think what we want to focus on is the relationship between you and your brother. And so, you know, they came in and we sat down and we started talking. And I don't know how closely you're paying attention to the show, but the first scene of the show, when we sit down in my backyard, my eyes are already red and puffy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, wonderful. Mm. And then at the end of the show, when I say that thing about the neighbor not wanting to disconnect from my dog, that's like the only shot in the entire show where my eyes are clear and white and blue. So, you know, we just sit down and we start talking and we start talking about the story, because I've never told Leah my story before personally. And we just sit down and it just happens organically. And I talk about it and, you know, she asks follow-up questions and we discuss it. And it was a difficult 2 days of filming. That's for sure. I mean, when those 2 days were over, I thought to myself, I said, you know, I started my YouTube channel with the intention of telling my story. And I really have never done that. I've never at any point on my channel actually told my story, because it's so difficult to do. And after those 2 days of filming, I was like, well, Jesus Christ, I'm never going to do that again. I was like, I don't know if I can do that again. Mm. And so that was my role. I could not have been happier with how the entire thing was put together and edited, and how concise they kept the storyline and how much they were able to pack in to, you know, the 45 minutes or whatever it is of actual broadcast. And hopefully I'll be able to have an ongoing role in any future production that occurs in kind of, lining people up and telling the stories, but we'll see.
Do you know if Leah Remini, intends to do a second season, or was this sort of like a one-off thing for A&E?
I do believe that, she intends to do a second season. I think if you look at what she says at the end of season one, where she says, you know, I'm going to keep going as long as there is, kind of a productive path forward. If it looks like we can affect change, then I have a reason to keep doing this. If it looks like we're just spinning our wheels and telling stories over and over again, and there's no public interest in change, there's no governmental interest in change, then there's not really a purpose to doing the project. But, you know, with the amount of public support that this show has received, I would be shocked if season two isn't happening. And I believe, personally, I believe that it will, but, you know, I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody.
Aaron, what was the response to the show specific to you? You know, I think people, if they've been following Scientology closely, or even if they're not, even they're kind of on the periphery of this, the A&E show was a huge deal. And we'll get to that a little bit later, why that's so important. But what was the response specific to you? Did you receive any kind of harassment from Scientology? Anything strange? You know, obviously Leah Remini was getting slapped with all sorts of scary letters, you know, threatening to sue her. A&E was threatened. You know, very sort of typical. It's like their only tool to use right now. But did you receive anything like that?
Well, you know, they put up the hate website about me. They managed
Right. Yeah, you finally got a hate website, right?
They managed to use my own name in the URL, AaronSmithLevin.com. And I just haven't gotten around to taking the legal action to get that back. Because you can't just park a website with someone's name. I had already bought WhoIsAaronSmithLevin.com years ago. You'll notice
anticipation.
You'll notice everybody else's website is Who is Mark Headley? Who is Mike Rinder? Who is Amy Scobie? And then AaronSmithLevin.com.
Interesting. That's smart.
So, you know, they did this website. I got to tell you, I was pretty apprehensive. I was like, you know, I was pretty apprehensive about what they could dig up from my ethics folders and my PC folders to put up on that website. I mean, I haven't lived a crazy life, but it doesn't take much to embarrass somebody.
Yeah.
And I was really apprehensive on who they were going to roll out to record videos about what a terrible person I was. And I was more surprised as to who they didn't get to do videos instead of who they did get to do videos. I mean, they got my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law, and they got my former commanding officer from the Sea Org. And the thing is, they hardly had anything bad to say about me. I was like, are you kidding? When are you going to get to the bad parts?
Really?
I mean, when I say hardly anything bad, how many times can you repeat, Aaron's a mean person, or we really think Aaron's wife is afraid of him? Oh my God, really? You think my wife is afraid of me? That's what you have to say about me? Are you kidding? We think Aaron pressured Heather to disconnect from us. And I was sitting here going, didn't you just acknowledge that my wife actually was in a position of having to make a decision whether to lose her family or lose her husband? Like, didn't you just acknowledge that in your statement? My commanding officer was like, the worst thing he said about me was, Aaron's like a snake oil salesman. And other than that, what he said was totally normal. You know, Aaron, he could flip like a switch. He had a really bad temper. Really? That's the worst you could say about me? You know, everyone else is being told that they're adulterers and prostitutes and criminals and wife beaters. And I'm like, all you could say about me was that I'm a dick. I mean, Jesus Christ, that's not bad. And I really felt bad though for my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law. If you look at these videos, they're very poorly done. They have absolutely no shred of emotion on them whatsoever. It looks like a robot reading a script, like a POW from North Korea that's trotted out to read a statement in front of the cameras. And, and just jumping to a small tangent, my sister-in-law, like that must have been, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago she recorded that video, maybe 6 weeks ago. Well, guess what? Last week she left the fucking Sea Org.
Really?
She left the Sea Org. Turns out she's 4 months pregnant. Didn't even know it. Went to the doctor because she was not feeling well. And they're like, you're pregnant. And she's like, that's not possible. And they did a blood test. And like, no, you're pregnant. And you're having a boy. And she's like, I just had my period. And they're like, sorry, I don't know what to tell you. And now she's out of the Sea Org, which means it's actually one step like. When my wife's family disconnected from her, the only reason that we were like, no, look, we understand you're in a bad situation. You've got to do what you've got to do. The only reason we felt that way is because my wife's sister, Erica, was in the Sea Org and had been for over 10 years. And, you know, if she's in the Sea Org, Heather's family doesn't see her very often. They certainly don't have an opportunity to talk to her and be like, you know, look, we'd like you to come with us. But now that she's out of the Sea Org, it's one step closer to the possibility that, you know, maybe her family will finally see the light and decide that the church is not more important than their relationship with their daughter and their granddaughters. So, that's very interesting. But your question was about harassment and stuff. You know, other than the website that was put up, there really hasn't been any harassment. One thing I found interesting is that the content of the website they put up about me made it very obvious I was being followed for a while. There's information on there that couldn't possibly have been obtained if they were not following me and Mike on a day-to-day basis, in some of our business activities. So I thought that was interesting. Because, and I had suspected based on some things that were happening that one or both of us had been being followed. A couple of my friends who are in the Scientology world, but are not really Scientologists and have continued to be friends with me on the down low. And we're very careful about where we meet up and how much time we spend together. And, a couple of them had been pulled into the church and sort of confronted with anonymous reports that they had been spotted with me. And I said, that's not likely. And two people in a couple of weeks is too much of a coincidence. I must be being followed. But it's also hard to believe that I wouldn't be able to tell if I was being followed. So, you know what I mean? Like, right. I think everyone thinks that they would know, but.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But once this website came out, I was like, oh, that's very interesting. Mm. It's not possible to know what they're knowing, what they're talking about without following me.
Right.
So anyway, there's that. So is that harassment? It's hard to call it a harassment if you don't know what's happening. It's not like I've got anybody picketing outside my door or vandalizing my properties or spreading rumors about me or anything like that. Now, I don't remember quite how long ago it was that we spoke, but one thing that did happen is after Leah's show filmed, the rumor that started to circulate around the neighborhood, because we've got a big centrally located dog park not far from our house, so a lot of people in the neighborhood meet and talk. The rumor was that the reason we had production trucks outside of our house for 2 days is we were filming a porn movie.
Oh, yeah. I think you emailed me that. Yeah.
Yeah, we were filming a porn. I was like, so what is it about, my nice little picket fence house with three little daughters and two dogs screams, porn studio over here, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I'm sure that rumor didn't come from the church. And actually, I just went to a neighborhood meeting last night. We have our little neighborhood association civic meeting. I was shocked to see that three Sea Org members and another Scientologist showed up to this meeting. There was only 20 people there. Three of them were Sea Org members.
Were they there to just kind of check you out or?
I don't know. I doubt it. I think there's a possibility that technically my neighborhood civic association includes the Hacienda Gardens where the Sea Org members live, which is about a mile away from me.
Oh,
and it's quite possible that they're there just to represent the Hacienda Gardens.
Okay.
But I found it really interesting. I'm like, I'm just thinking to myself, do these people know who I am? Like,
we are all
here in the same meeting. Only one of them kept staring at me. The other ones, I'm not sure they knew who I was, but so, nothing I would truly define as harassment, certainly nothing that, impedes my day to day life.
And is that kind of becoming a bit more of the norm?
Yeah.
You don't see this sort of like, what was it, like the Squirrel Squad and the more sort of like overt, where you come back home and your door is open and things have been moved around in your house and people, private eyes following you and making it known that they're following you. I assume that's just so much of the bad PR that's out there that, the worst thing they can do is pull up a website. I just pulled up the website and it's like Aaron snapped at his wife, and Aaron, yelled at his kids. It's like, well, who doesn't,
Right. Yeah, no, honestly, I think you're referring to the squirrel busters that hung out outside Marty Rathman's place for like 6 months. God, you just can't get away with that shit anymore today.
Right.
You just can't. And I think what happened with Marty, I think that was like the church's Waterloo. And I think the public backlash to what they did, I think was kind of the final straw. They just can't get away with that shit anymore. I mean, I don't know who really the church considers public enemy number one right now. It's no longer Marty. And I guess it's a toss up between Mike and Leah and Ron Miscavige. But I think Mike is there's a strong case to be made for him being public enemy number one. And I know for a fact that the church doesn't harass him. Because it's almost like, I don't know, what would they accomplish if they were to harass him, all there would be is a new TV show about that in the next month.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, there's never been so much public attention on the church abuses as there is right now. And I don't think Mike, Leah, or A&E even ever dreamed that this show was going to be this successful in terms of bringing public awareness to church abuses. You had the mayor of Clearwater just two or three days ago publicly comment that, the church should be bringing families together, not tearing them apart. Because he was asked to comment on Leah's television show and he did not back down from it. And I thought that was fantastic. So, you know, I think you mentioned any harassment to me, but also I think you mentioned, like, what has the, what kind of, what has the response been? Did you just mean church response or
in
general?
Yeah, I do want to get to it. Yeah. I mean, like, what the sort of larger impact of the show, because, in my mind, at least, excuse me, this has been way bigger than Going Clear could have ever been. And that's not to disparage Going Clear. It's a great, you know, I encourage people to check out the documentary, check out the book. But, you know, this isn't like meant, you know, like in a mean way, but, you know, that's like an HBO show. It's a bit more, I don't know, that's attracting a certain crowd, you know, that were probably to a degree already fairly aware that Scientology was a thing. The A&E show, that's hitting at, you know, middle America, average people that were far removed from Scientology that probably remember Leah Remini from The King of Queens.
Yeah.
And now they're seeing the forced abortions, you know, a whole list of new sort of allegations coming out. So, yeah, what's the larger kind of impact of this? What's it been like?
So, I'll kind of answer in a broad way. Let's talk about Going Clear for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Going Clear kicked the door open for examination of Scientology by the media. And I know it had been done before, but it kicked the doors open in an important way. And the problem with Going Clear is that because of the nature of the stories that they focused on, the stories they told were not typical examples of what it's like to be a Scientologist or what the average experience is of being in Scientology. And here's what I mean by that. They told stories of people who, for the most part, were at international management, right? And your average Scientologist or your average Scientology staff member has never been to INT, doesn't even know where it is, has no understanding of what being at INT is like. And when people talk about INT having, you know, razor wire and guards and being a prison, the public at large confuses that with Scientology in general.
Yeah.
And being in the Sea Org and being on staff is nothing like being in international management. Now, even though those stories were not typical of what it's like to be a Scientologist, the effect that it has was to kick the doors open to examining Scientology by the media, right? And like you said, the television show, Leah's show, is – there's some guys who were featured in season one that were still at international management, but the stories that are being told are much more typical of what it means to be a Scientologist, what it's like to be a Scientologist, what is likely to happen to your family for if your family gets into Scientology. And like you said, these stories are resonating more with people who haven't already been watching Scientology for years. And, you know, millions of – and also how often did HBO run a rerun of Going Clear? I have no idea, but I know that A&E's been doing – you know, Scientology, the Aftermath marathons.
Right.
On a weekly basis. So, how do I define the response? It's been incredible. I mean, come on, every week, Rolling Stone is doing a preview of the five things we learned about Scientology this week. you know, Us Weekly is running this stuff. And, I mean, I got hundreds of messages on Facebook from, people who had nothing to do with me or Scientology before. People who were messaging me saying, you know, I had to stop watching the show because I'm crying and I just wanted to send you, you know, a message saying your show is having an impact and it's important and keep doing what you're doing. Mm. And after Going Clear, I certainly didn't have people coming up to me being like, you know, who sort of knew I had been involved in Scientology. I didn't have anyone coming up to me saying, hey, I saw this show and I wanted to ask you more about it. Okay, let me give you some examples of what's happened recently. I had a building inspector come to a house that I purchased, and he walks up and he goes, didn't I see you on TV recently? I went into Hungry Howie's to pick up a pizza. The guy behind the counter says, just reached his hand out and shook my hand without saying anything, you know, and said, what you're doing is really important. Keep going. I took my kids to Disney World a couple weeks ago. A staff member came up to me and said, you look really familiar. And I said, I've been watching A&E. And they're like, yes. I went out to eat at a local restaurant. I had three separate people come up to me and say, you know, hey, I've been watching the show and I appreciate, you know, what you and everyone is doing to speak out against these abuses. I got into an Uber just to go to a comedy show down the street. And the guy reached over and said, he pointed at me and he's like, my wife is your dental hygienist, and we were talking about you at dinner last night. Right? I mean, it's been insane. I went to the grocery store. I picked up a box of wings, and the guy's like, can I say that you look very familiar? And I said, yes. And he goes, what you guys are doing is very important. Like, thank you for what you're doing. I was like, Jesus, I don't know if this is just because it's Clearwater or if it's like this in other cities, but it is crazy.
And you're just one person too, you know?
Well, again, I was just one at one story. Yeah, one person.
Story. Yeah.
Right. Right.
And, you know, again, you were talking about like international management. You know, this is where shit got pretty crazy. You know, this is where you're talking about physical abuse. You're talking about, you know, locking people up in places like the Hole and other, you know, the wild shit that was going on in Gold Base. You know, people will, if they've seen Going Clear, they'll be familiar with the, what was it, the like musical chairs with Bohemian Rhapsody. That's really kind of scary stuff. But, you know, there's a lot of people like yourself and others who are just as horrific stories, you know, in terms of breaking up families, I mean, losing a sense of self, all of these horrible things that happen. And it's just average people, regular people, you know, like you, I know you've said before, like on my show and others, you're like, yeah, leaving the Sea Org wasn't as scary as, you know, as the sort of like nighttime escapes that Mike Rinder and Marty Rathman and other people have had to, you know, do. But it was still, I mean, it fucked with your life, you know? And that's, I think, again, that's so wonderful with the A&E show is just showing kind of average stories, you know? It's a dangerous group that has undue influence over you. And because of that, you can be an average person and it can just screw you up, you know?
That's right. I mean, Mary and David Kahn, they were episode 5. You know, if you met these, so they are the ones who, you know, she made it up through OT8, and they have one son, Sammy, who disconnected from them. If you met these guys in life, just normal life, they're the most cheerful, happy, successful people. And you'd never know that they had this heartbreaking, terrible story of Scientology ripping their family apart. You know, like me, if you met me in life, you'd never know. Like I have friends who I've known for years who used to be in Scientology and they're not in Scientology anymore. And we hang out on a weekly basis. And even he never knew that I actually had this really terrible aspect to my story because I don't walk around and be like, let me tell you about my brother Colin.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And so it shows that these terrible things happen to normal people. You know, one thing that bugs me is that if I still get comments on my YouTube channels of like, oh, I don't see how stupid do you have to be to fall for this stuff. I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
If that's how you feel, you just don't understand yet. You know, it's not helpful to just judge someone that there's something wrong with them that they fell for this, but it could never happen to you. You know, like you're missing the point if that's what you've taken away from these stories. This could happen to anyone.
It does. I mean, that's, you know what? I think part of that too is they hear things like Xenu and Thetans and the sort of crazier aspects of the higher OT levels. And as you said, you never even went clear when you were there. You know,
exactly.
There are people there are Scientologists that are, you know, taking all of these courses and things. They don't even know about Xenu. You know, that never enters into their brain when they're going about their everyday life. So yeah, I mean, people join cults or control groups all the time and don't. Well, it's the same people like bitching on your YouTube channel. You know, when there's a presidential election, you know, I'm sure they're losing it. If you know, you got to vote for this person. You know,
right?
Or else, you know, it's World War III is gonna you know, something horrible. So you know, these sort of culty behavior is everywhere.
That's right. You know, people don't join cults thinking they're joining a cult. That's the thing. Like a cult is something people call a group when they're looking in from the outside. You know, no one in a cult thinks they're in a damn cult.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like, our cult's better than that cult.
Yeah, exactly. And I tell you, something you just said reminded me. Did you get a chance to listen to Leah Remini on Joe Rogan's podcast? Did you catch that?
No, not yet. I just saw that she did it. I didn't even realize.
So I listened to the whole 2.5 hours yesterday. The content is fantastic, and I'm continually amazed that I can actually keep learning new things from listening to Leah's stories, and when I read her book, I learned things I didn't know. One thing I learned yesterday that I did not know. She tells the story of when she first did OT3 and read the materials for the first time. And she says that her mother came in with her because she was a celebrity. Her mother was already like OT7, right? Her mother came in with her and was allowed to like stand there while Leah was reading the OT3 materials for the first time. And just because she was so excited that she was going to see Leah read it for the first time. And Leah read it and she's thinking to herself, what the fuck is this? Right? And here's what I learned that I didn't know. She told the supervisor, the course supervisor, that, you know, because OT1 is actually OT3, it's actually a course. It's done in a course room.
Explain OT3 to people.
Well, OT3 is the advanced Scientology auditing level where you learn, you're told about the Xenu story and blowing up the Thetans and the volcanoes on Earth 76 trillion years ago. And that is what Scientologists think. I'm sorry. That is what the public at large, for the most part, thinks Scientology is. Scientology is Xenu and Scientologists worship Xenu, but that's just stupid. It's not true. The Xenu story is supposed to be Scientology's explanation for why Earth is such a fucked up place and why people act crazy sometimes or a lot of the time. Okay, so what I didn't know is Leah told the course supervisor. She said, look, I'm not very happy right now. I'm not happy that this is what I've been waiting for. I'm not happy that this is the famous wall of fire. I'm not very happy about this. And the course supervisor said to her, that's okay. You don't have to believe it. You just have to audit the subject. You just have to audit the material, right? You don't have to believe it. Now, I did not know that a public person doing OT3 would get away with saying, I don't believe this. I thought from some other story that I'd heard that they sort of had to swallow their disappointment and pretend like they believed it in order to get a pat on the head and permission to keep going. And the reason I thought that was fascinating is that it sort of explains how people – it gives a perfect example of how someone can be exposed to information that at first they think is total horseshit and through small little gradient steps be sort of coaxed and coached into walking down a path that leads them to eventually believing it, right? Like she straight up told the course supervisor, this sounds like bullshit and I'm not happy. And he goes, that's okay. You don't have to believe it. Just take the next step. Just take the next step. Just audit yourself on this material. Pick up the cans. Look at the e-meter. Ask yourself this question. Just take the first answer that comes to your mind. And Leah explained very clearly how the fact that after you read the OT3 materials, you then become your own auditor, right? You're becoming your own auditor, but that means you're responsible for working yourself through this material. And so if you feel like it's not going right and you're not happy with it, you really only have yourself to blame. So you almost have an incentive to do well,
right,
and audit the material correctly and experience the gains you're supposed to experience, because then it validates that you're a good auditor you're your own good auditor. And she said that Steve Hassan, the cult expert that appeared on one of the episodes, he said Scientology is more insidious than many of these other cults because you get the person to brainwash themselves.
Yes.
Through the process of solo auditing and auditing yourself on the advanced levels of Scientology. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm still learning stuff about this shit. Like, I can't believe I'm still learning stuff by listening to others about a group I've been involved in for 20, 25, 30 years, and I'm still learning to this day just how much of a mind fuck it is. And anyway, I highly suggest listening to the Joe Rogan podcast because it's phenomenal. If I'm not mistaken, I think Leah is going to be appearing on Bill Maher sometime soon, and I cannot wait. I cannot wait to see how Bill treats this subject, you know, but yeah.
You and me both.
Yeah.
That's a great point, the brainwashing yourself. I think that also just goes to the power that Scientology can have over people. That you don't even need – and I think it makes sense because, you know, it in part, that's how it's been so far-reaching, you know, which is not to, like, inflate the numbers. There's less and less people. But at one point, you know, they were fairly large-scale all over the world. And if you can kind of teach someone to indoctrinate themselves, well, you know, sort of the sky's the limit with all of that. Eric, did you ever meet Leah while you were in Scientology?
If I ever met her, it was only seeing her. I'd never spoken to her before. My wife did. Like, my wife's post in the Sea Org was actually – her job was to interact with the celebrities and kind of keep them happy and make sure they didn't have any complaints about the services they were getting. So she knew Leah pretty well, actually.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So on the show – I can't remember if this made the final cut or not. On the show – because I had never spoken to Leah before we started filming.
Right, yeah.
I said to her, Leah, you know, I've mentioned this to a few of the people so far, but I'm not sure you realize that you know my wife. And she's like, who's your wife? I'm like, I can't believe this has not made it back to you yet. So I pull up a photo of my wife, and she's like, get the fuck out of here. and then the producer was like, what just happened? Can we roll camera? So Leah knows my wife pretty well. But no, I had never met her before.
Okay. And just one other thing, going back to talking about the OT3 levels and not believing it, do you think there's any of that, the fact that Leah Remini was a celebrity? And that, you know, again, because there is, like, you know, a celebrity Scientologist is allowed to bend the rules pretty much whenever they want to. You know, or to a degree. Is that anything there? Because I know, you know, with other people, it's like, I've heard stories where they read the OT3 material, they're saying, this is crazy, read it again. I still don't believe it, read it again, and again, and again, until you kind of just wear them down. But anything about that, just that Leah was a celebrity, or just merely the fact that that the Xenu thing doesn't even really matter to them in the long run?
Right. No, I don't think it was because Leah was a celebrity. And I think if you listen to how she tells her story, it's actually consistent with other stories that have been told. Because in her story, she does say that, you know, the supervisor asked her to sketch out, do a drawing of what she felt her understanding was of the material she was reading. And she would do the drawing and he would be like, nope, read it again and do it again, read it again and do it again. But the whole read it again, read it again, read it again was just to make sure it was being properly understood, not to make sure it was being believed. Mm. And I think the course supervisors are very used to people reading that information and being like, what the fuck, dude?
Right.
And I think that's part of how they're trained to handle that, how to address that when it occurs, is to – I think they're trained to say, you don't have to believe this. You just have to do it. Mm. It doesn't – it's because remember, Scientologists also don't believe that Scientology is a belief.
Right.
You'll hear that from Scientologists all the time. Scientology is not something to believe. It's something to do. And auditing isn't something you have to have faith in. It's just something you have to do. It's just something you have to participate in. As long as you are following the auditor's instructions and commands and answering questions honestly, Scientologists believe auditing works regardless of whether you think it's going to work. So no, I don't think it was just because she's a celebrity. I think that's pretty typical of someone doing OT3.
Mm. And is there any kind of, you know, almost like a litmus test involved with that? You know, sort of like if they can get past the Xenu stuff, then, they can kind of believe any of the sort of like superhuman skills that you'll learn later on and that you can, you know, save the world and those sort of things. Any kind of, or just throwing it out there. Anything about that, you think, or?
No, it's actually kind of the other way around, because before, there are so many people at all levels of Scientology, even who are not clear or not OT or anything, they already believe.
Right.
They already really, really believe.
Right.
Because everything, all the OT levels after OT3 really just harken back to OT3. OT3 is where the concept of body thetans are introduced. That what's wrong with you is that your body is composed of trillions or millions or billions or whatever of these thetans that are stuck to and actually comprise your body. That concept is never even hinted at any part of Scientology before OT3. So Xenu and the Body Thetans story are one and the same. And OT4 also deals with Body Thetans. OT5 deals with Body Thetans. OT6 is really just a course that teaches you how to audit OT7. And OT7, again, deals with Body Thetans. So it's not a litmus test because you already believe this, that the, you know, Scientology will turn you into a Jedi master like God. You believe that pretty early on in Scientology. And L. Ron Hubbard is telling that story and hanging that carrot out there at all levels of Scientology, even from the very first course. I mean, the very first policy of the very first course is called Keeping Scientology Working. And even in that policy, he's basically saying, this is the line in the sand. We have the answers to all life. And we have all the answers there are to have. So doing anything else other than Scientology is basically heretical. And so no, it's not really a litmus test. You actually have to prove that you are with the program for them to even,
right?
Well, for them to ever even let you onto OT1. There's a whole process called OT eligibility. And OT eligibility is like, well, Leah talked about this as well on Joe's podcast. She compared it to the movie Defending Your Life, which is an old movie from like the 80s, late 80s, early 90s. It's a great movie. Where you basically have to review your entire life in Scientology and before and answer up for whether you have been a good Scientologist and whether you've righted any wrongs that you've committed along the way and whether you're worthy of being allowed to start OT1. So I think that's a pretty long answer to your question.
No, that's good. I like you always give me a nice long answer. So there's some new stuff that the TV show has sort of revealed. And as you said, you're constantly learning new things. One thing that really did strike me and was something that I really didn't think was going on or didn't have any concept that was going on is the sexual abuse, which is, I mean, virtually never been talked about in any sort of real big public sort of a way. I have heard, obviously, you hear all sorts of rumors and stuff when you're like a Scientology watcher or doing research. I've heard John Atack, who wrote A Piece of Blue Sky, that he had heard, you know, some pretty crazy stuff when he was doing research, including an allegation of Hubbard with like a young boy in Morocco, I believe. But the, you know, in Leah's show, it is, you know, it's like a fairly large component of Scientology is this sexual abuse. Talk a little bit about that, Aaron, because that's
okay.
That's new, you know,
so correct me if I'm wrong. The only time I recall this coming up in Leah's show was in the first episode with Amy Scobie.
Yes.
Do you recall it coming up any other time?
No, I think that is it. But I know that that's, I mean, you and Mike Rinder talked about this in a recent video on for your channel as well. And it has just been something that, you know, now suddenly more and more people are talking. Yeah, this was real. This was going on the whole time.
You're totally correct. And sometimes I wind up in a funny situation of saying that yes, this happens. Yes, this happens. No, it never happened to me. And so I sound like I'm contradicting myself, right? So the thing is, I never observed or experienced sexual abuse in Scientology. But having said that, it does happen a lot. So is this a contradiction? Well, I'll keep talking. So, you know, when you have an organization that has a fundamental policy prohibiting any members from contacting law enforcement or governmental authorities for any reason whatsoever, that's a fucking problem. Especially when you have an organization that also has so many children working for it. So, I'm going to jump around here in my answers. If you feel like you need to get me to clarify anything, just jump in.
Sure.
So when I was in the Sea Org, there was a particular time when it became apparent that the Office of Special Affairs, which is the church's legal and public relations division, basically, it was very apparent that OSA was changing its policies on how to handle it, how to address it, when people confess to having had sex with minors in their auditing sessions. Scientologists would sometimes confess having sex, having had sex with minors whether the miners were Scientologists or not, whether this had occurred when the person was in Scientology or not, this is something that would come up. And there was a very specific date when OSA started saying, if anybody confesses to having had sex with a minor, they need to be routed out of the organization and off lines. They call it off lines, which means you're no longer doing services at the church. It doesn't mean you're labeled a suppressive person and kicked out of Scientology. It just means we are not going to let you be in the church doing services. We need to distance ourselves from you because you've committed a crime for which there is no statute of limitations. And I have come to understand, and I don't claim to be the lawyer, so someone can call bullshit on this, but I have come to understand that there is no priest penitent protection afforded when someone confesses to having raped, sexually abused, or statutorily raped somebody. I'm a child. So even in Catholicism, if someone goes into a priest and confesses to having sexually abused a child, that priest is legally compelled to report that to the authorities. Now, whether that occurs or not, who knows? I don't know how anybody would ever have oversight as to whether these things are occurring or not. But the fact is, you have to report it. And so I'm mentioning that little story because I do know that Scientologists confess to having abused, molested, and statutorily raped children. And I do know that the church doesn't report it when that happens. The church's handling is to distance themselves from these people, but the handling is absolutely not to report it to the authorities. Now, the instances of abuse that people have been coming out and people have been contacting me and Mike and Leah and other people. And there are Scientology schools that exist, right? One of which was called the Mace Kingsley School in New Mexico. This was a school for basically Scientology delinquents. This was a school for kids who were constantly in trouble. And it turns out that a lot of kids were molested at that school. There were cadet orgs in various Sea Org bases, right? So in, people who watch Scientology know that there's a group of orgs in Los Angeles that are known as PAC. PAC is short for Pacific Area Command. PAC refers to the number of organizations that are on L. Ron Hubbard Way between Sunset Boulevard and Fountain Avenue in Hollywood. There used to be a cadet org for PAC, right? So the Sea Org members at PAC, their kids used to live at a ranch, you know, about an hour away from Los Angeles. That was called the Cadet Org. It's also known as the PAC Ranch. A lot of fucking kids got molested at this place. And the church knew about it. And the church never reported it and they covered it up. A lot of kids at Mace Kingsley were molested and the church knew about it. The two people who were running that school, Mace Kingsley, are OT8 Class 8 Scientologists, right? Like, it was known. We know that the church knew that this happened and never reported it. Now, are kids being molested in Scientology on the same scale that kids are being molested in the Catholic Church? Probably not. Does that matter? No, it doesn't matter. Also, I'm not trying to say that all kids in Scientology were molested. Right, I was never molested.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that when this has occurred, it does not get reported. In some cases, the parents are not informed. Okay. In some cases, the parents will be pulled in and told what has happened. And I think Mike said this in one of our interviews, that he's aware of a child was molested, somebody was going to report it. And so the way the church dealt with this was to pull the parent in and make sure that the parent wasn't going to press charges before the report was made, right? And I'm sorry, you don't have a right to withhold child sex abuse from the authorities as a citizen of this country. That's not a right you have. It's not a right the First Amendment gives you. And that's going to be a problem for the church. Because the church has a policy of never informing the authorities of anything that a Scientologist does to another Scientologist. And that directly contravenes their responsibility to report child sex crimes. So what are they going to do about it? And there's no statute of limitations on child sex crimes. And a lot of these people have left Scientology and are ready to talk. And the church is going to have a really fucking hard time of it the next year or two if they haven't already had a hard time of it in the last year or two.
Yeah, no, I mean, and this is like kind of one of this is one of those things that just will destroy, you know, destroy your organization.
That's right.
It's really hard to kind of walk this one back and
that's right.
You know, explain it away or come up with something. What's the policy towards individuals who admit, whether in auditing or something else, that they have molested a kid? Because, and then, you know, you're talking about, you just mentioned some of these people were OT8. Now, isn't that essentially, like a defect of Scientology? That they've failed in some sort of a way? You know, what's, like, if you start doing drugs and you're a high level Scientologist, you know, then it's like, well, Scientology wasn't working. You know, it was supposed to rid you of those urges. So what's the kind of, like, response by Scientology to these people?
That's right. Well, as you know, Scientologists believe that Scientology, when applied correctly, works 100% of the time. But when it comes to the subject of auditing requires, and again, I'm speaking from the viewpoint of a true believer, right? I'm just,
sure.
I'm not, okay. Auditing requires that the participant is completely open and honest. And so Scientologists will concede that it is possible to fake your way through levels, but that the levels aren't designed to be foolproof. They're designed to work for honest participants doing them honestly. So if somebody reaches OT8 and it turns out they're still a child sex abuser or they're still a drug user, Scientologists just say, oh, well, he's a failed case and he's no case gain and he would just lied his way through and he's just a suppressive person and he just has you know, crimes and whatnot. And because, yeah, Scientologists, they say a lot of contradictory truths.
Yeah.
And, you know, and here's an example of one. They said, you don't have to believe it. You just have to do it.
Sure.
Well, if you just do then it shouldn't be possible to just do it and make it all the way through and have it still not work. Right.
Yeah.
Because you can't, right? So at the same time, somebody can make it all the way through and they'd be like, oh, well, you just did the motions. You didn't really believe it. You just faked your way through it. And you're like, wait, I thought I didn't have to believe it. I thought I just had to go through the motions. And so they can't have it both ways. But they try to have it both ways. So, you know, yes, OT8s have absolutely, reverted to drugs. OT8s have absolutely committed sex crimes. OT8s have absolutely gone out and committed murder. And yet Scientologists just explain that away by saying, well, he was never really OT8. You know, right. He was probably never really clear and he went through all the OT levels without being clear and it messed him up. And of course that's what happens. And that's why you need to go back and redo your bridge whenever your case supervisor tells you to. Yeah, don't think for a second that stuff like that makes Scientologists question the workability of Scientology, because it doesn't at all.
Right. I know, I'm thinking, I always encourage people to listen to the interview you did, a 3-hour interview you did with Nick Lister.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, he talks about, you know, he's going up the bridge, he's doing all these things, and he's partying nonstop. You know, he talks about he was like in a rehab facility with other Scientologists, you know, that was run specifically for Scientologists that were, you know, getting all fucked up on drugs and stuff. And again, right. It's just that sort of like, I mean, is that kind of just a basic response? Like, do it again. Like you didn't really, you went through the motions. You just got to start all over again.
Yeah. And this time be honest. You know, that's what we told you. Yeah. Be honest. I mean, they really have that, Mike Rinder's done a couple great blog posts about this, that the no true Scotsman would, you know, like there's this way of explaining away things that don't make sense. Or, you know, if someone kills in the name of Christianity, Christians will go, he's not really a Christian because no true Christian would kill someone.
Right.
And you go, well, what about the ones that do? Well, they're, right?
Right, yeah.
Scientologists are the same way. No true Scientologist would do this, so he's not really a Scientologist. And you're like, okay, fine. Well, it's just, it's an intellectual laziness.
Here we are. We're at the break. We will continue in the second hour a bunch more on this, so join me then.
I like very much
radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology, they have all these great things that they're gonna do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network and we just need that so much.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Sensen, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park. And when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud. And it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride. And we kill those people. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio. Hawkins Policy Radio, offering a unique perspective on everything. Geopolitics, culture creation, the reality of the world we live in. Coming to you live from New York City, your host, Pierce Redmond.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Porkins Policy Radio. I, of course, am your host, Pierce Redman. If you are just joining us right now in the second hour, we have been speaking with Aaron Smith Levin, all about Scientology, about his experiences working with Leah Remini on Scientology, The Aftermath, the A&E show. And we were just before, as we were coming up on the break, we were touching on the whole issue of sexual abuse within the church, and some of the way that Scientology has kind of covered it up. And just quickly, Aaron, I just wanted to, one just sort of final thing about that whole sort of dark chapter in Scientology. But you know, have you ever heard anything from the various people, and you know some pretty high-level people formerly of Scientology, anything with Hubbard at all? And you know, because we've got like the Commodore's messengers, mm-hmm. which were all these kids. You know, there's all, you know, Hubbard was surrounded by children when he was on, you know, the Scientology ships when they were mm-hmm. out at sea, lighting his cigarettes, you know, kids walking around with ashtrays for him, and even dressing him at times, or all the time, I guess.
Sure.
Anything on that? Because, you know, again, on the surface of that, it looks super creepy and shady.
Sure. No, it's a great question, and it's an important point to cover. The answer is no. One of the absolute best writings I have seen on this subject is from Lois Riesdorf. She was in her story, and part of her story and part of her son's story was told in the final episode of Leah Remini's show. She's the one whose son had an undiagnosed bipolar condition and threw a hammer through the window of the LA Org. What they didn't cover, what they didn't have time to cover in that TV show, is Lois Riesdorf knew L. Ron Hubbard better than almost anybody on this earth still alive. Lois Riesdorf was one of the first Commodore's messengers. She was one of only three senior watch messengers. My math on that could be wrong, but I think that's accurate. She spent, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years every day of her life with L. Ron Hubbard. She was one of the young girls who was a Commodore's messenger. I mean, this is when she was, I don't know, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, right? And, she said, she has a 7-part write-up that she did on Mike Rinder's blog. So if anyone just Googles Lois Riesdorf Part 1, they'll find the beginning of her story. She says definitively, she's like, look, I know it looks weird.
Right. Yeah.
I know having a bunch of little girls running around in hot pants and, you know, midriff shirts looks fucking weird.
Yeah.
But nothing ever happened. And I believe her. And I've never heard anyone in Scientology or anyone who's left Scientology ever say anything to the contrary, that anything ever happened. You know, I could come up with all sorts of reasons why I think the Commodore's messengers were mostly girls and mostly young and all that stuff. And even the ones who've said they were responsible for sort of dressing, LRH in the morning, never said they've seen him naked. They've right. never said that. Right. And, you know, I just, there's no way to get around the fact that it looks weird. The optics on it are terrible.
Yeah.
But I've never heard anyone say that LRH ever did anything appropriate with anyone. I mean, no matter what the age. I mean, it seems like even he and his wife lived, even Mary Sue and L. Ron Hubbard lived relatively separate lives. Yeah, I've never heard anything about it. Mike, Tom, Marty, all these guys, Marty never knew LRH, but Tom DeBock did, I believe. Lois certainly did. Mike certainly did. No one's ever said anything ever happened.
Anything you may – I know like his son Nibs has accused him of stuff. Do you think that's just Nibs? I mean, he had a fucked up childhood to say the least.
Now, look, I'm not sure that I've read everything that's out there to read as far as Nibs goes. I don't remember ever hearing him say that LRH did anything with kids.
Okay.
I do remember reading things about I guess LRH being very promiscuous in his younger years. You know, obviously there's the Jack Parsons stuff and Aleister Crowley stuff. I've never read any accusations from LRH Jr. or the grandkids or anything about stuff with kids.
Well, and you'd think, too, I mean, that would have come out by now.
Absolutely. John Atack and Robert Vaughn, or who was the biographer, I think? Robert Vaughn, I think?
Yeah.
For sure, right?
Well, I know John Atack has mentioned that he's heard rumors, but yeah, I mean, if someone was going to get that, he would have gotten it, I think, already.
I agree with you on that.
He would have put it in a book or something. Well, okay, Aaron, with all that being said, you know, this sexual abuse, yet another scandal, that Scientology is weathering and will have to continue to weather. We've got Leah Remini's show coming out. We've got her even, speaking of, you know, mentioning Shelley Miscavige, another one of these sort of, I don't know, Scientology secrets that nobody seems to want to touch at all. Any sense of what's going on inside Scientology, you know, inside upper management right now? Any kind of guess, I would suppose, at what is going through David Miscavige's head right now?
So there's been some changes happening that, like, for example, Scientology Media Productions, the big giant movie production studio that was just recently opened up on either Sunset Boulevard. I think it's Sunset or Hollywood. I don't know which one. I think Sunset. It's the old KCET Studios in KCET Studios on Sunset Boulevard. This isn't a tangent. I'm just getting to my answer. Okay. So recently this giant movie studio was opened up. It's called Scientology Media Productions. And it's completely redundant because at International Management, they already have Golden Era Productions, which is state of the art, everything. It's already a movie production studio up at International Management. So why am I mentioning this? Because this is part of an effort to get people out of International Management. David Miscavige is trying to slim down how many people are at International Management. He doesn't need them. He doesn't want them. He doesn't like people. He doesn't like being surrounded by people. And so, you know, the less people are there, the less people he can have there, the better. So Scientology Media Productions opening up was a way for him to move the entirety of Golden Era Productions out of international, off of the INT base and move it to Hollywood, right? That's a lot of people. Okay. Like, I mean, yeah, Golden Era Productions had hundreds of staff, right? And Golden Era Productions was also considered the low men. They were all the low men on the totem pole at International Management. They were considered like the shitty people. If you were in trouble, you got busted down to Gold. You know, most of International Management, Golden Era Productions wasn't even considered part of International Management. They were considered beneath International Management. They just happened to be on the same base. So sometimes people call it the INT base. Sometimes people call it Gold or the Gold base. Actually, the truth is Scientologists, serial members don't call it the Gold base. The media has taken to calling it gold base. No. So to use the proper language, you'd say the INT base or you would say Gold. I'm going to Gold or he's at Gold. You would never say Gold base. So the point I'm making here is that David Miscavige is trying to get rid of people out of International Management. The truth is, there isn't hardly any international management. I mean, Mike Rinder and Marty Rathman and Tom DeVocht have already described how Miscavige has completely dismantled the structure of international management. It doesn't exist. It's just a bunch of people doing random things. These people are not on their actual posts that they're supposed to be on. Like when a letter comes from the executive director international, that letter is written by David Miscavige. It's not written by Guillaume Lacerre, who's supposed to be the executive director international. So, I mean, your question is what's happening at management. He's trying to scale down. He's got all the money he needs. He has all the messaging power he needs. He controls Scientology through the international events that get held 5 or 6 or 7 times per year. He controls Scientology through his network of RTC representatives who represent him on every Sea Org base in the world. He even has RTC representatives that represent him at middle management, right? So he already has the way, he already has the infrastructure in place to get his intentions and his orders directly to every Scientology org in the world without having to go through layers of management. So he's trying to scale down so that he can have his own little, you know, his own little base that he doesn't have to tolerate, you know, 1,000 people and all of their needs and wants and whatever. And the less people that are around to witness his temper tantrums, the better.
Right.
So that really is what's happening. And you mentioned Shelley Miscavige. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Because I have some things I'd like to say about that.
Please, I would love to touch on that because I just find that one of the more fascinating stories out there. So just for the listeners, Aaron, just a little bit of background on Shelley Miscavige.
Sure. So Shelley Miscavige was David Miscavige's wife, and her post in the Sea Org was David Miscavige's assistant. She was not known by the public. She was not somebody who would speak at events. For the record, my take on this is significantly different than Leah's, even though I do agree with everything Leah's doing and saying on this subject. My take on it is different than hers. So here's what I mean by that. Shelley Miscavige on her own was not a public figure. She was David Miscavige's assistant and wife. She wasn't someone who, I would say 99.99% of Scientology public have never seen or heard of Shelley Miscavige. I would say 95% of Sea Org members have never seen Shelley Miscavige. I've seen her once. I've never spoken to her. So why am I saying all this? It's not like she was a Mike Rinder who was known by all Scientologists and then suddenly disappeared. Shelley Miscavige is first and foremost a Sea Org member. Secondly, her post was David Miscavige's assistant. And thirdly, she was also his wife. So, you know, Shelley pissed off David, and David decided he didn't want her around anymore. And he demoted her, and he divorced her, I believe.
Really?
And yeah, and the fact that she is no longer COB's assistant is why you don't see her anymore. Now, when I say, here's why I say my take on it is different than Leah's, but I still agree with what Leah's saying. Leah is approaching this from a human angle. She's saying, Shelley was my friend. I used to share letters with Shelley. I used to share gifts with Shelley. I used to see Shelley. My friend has disappeared, and I should be able to make sure she's okay. Now, I take it from a different angle. I take it from someone who was in the Sea Org, okay? Shelley does not – Sea Org members in general are not public people. Sea Org members who work at International Management are not public people. The only reason Shelley was ever even remotely a public person – and I realize I'm contradicting myself. I already said Shelley was not a public person. The only reason Leah ever knew Shelley is because Shelley was David's assistant. If – let me clarify this even further. If Shelley was married to David and Shelley was not his assistant, let's say Shelley had some other post. Let's say she was the the scripts writer at Golden Era Productions. Shelley would never have traveled anywhere with David. Shelley wasn't traveling with David because they were married. Shelley was traveling with David because she was his assistant. Okay? So if Shelley gets put on another post, guess what? Shelley disappears. The fact that someone no longer hears from Shelley Miscavige doesn't mean she's disappeared. People never hear from the people at International Management. Okay, now, but I understand where Leah's coming from. She's saying, look, I don't need to deal with all that bullshit. Shelley's a human being. I'm a human being. This is somebody I used to be friends with, and now she's dropped off the face of the earth, and I don't have any way of knowing that she's okay. And that's true, and that's accurate. That's not disingenuous. Leah can say, she wants to make sure that Shelley Miscavige is okay. And until she knows that she's okay, she doesn't know that she's okay. Well, that's fine. I'm just looking at it from a different perspective. Shelley Miscavige has been demoted to another organization. We know where she is. We know what she's doing. And the fact is that she currently has a post that most Sea Org members would fucking kill for. Okay? She's got a sweetheart fucking post in a little base in the middle of nowhere, in a very nice place, and most Sea Org members that I know would kill for that job, right? I don't care if her job is to sit around and do filing. The fact that she doesn't have a high stress job, the fact that she's in the middle of nowhere, most Sea Org members would kill to be in the middle of nowhere doing nothing.
Right, yeah.
Now there's other aspects to this story though. The truth is, Shelley is probably under watch. She is probably physically incapable of leaving where she is. But realize, I've grown up in a different way. I'm used to that. I'm used to being in the Sea Org and knowing you cannot just wake up in the morning and decide to leave and walk away.
Right.
So the fact that Shelly Miscavige is at this CST base and cannot wake up and leave on her own determinism every morning, I don't get morally outraged by that. Maybe I should be. You know, maybe I should be. I just don't. Because that's what it means to be a Sea Org member. And Shelly Miscavige is not a special Sea Org member. She's just another Sea Org member. So, but I'm telling you, that's just how I process the information. Mm-hmm. I completely understand why Leah processes it a different way. You know, the fact is, if Shelly Miscavige woke up in the morning and absolutely insisted, Debbie Cook style, that I better be the fuck out of here in 24 hours or I'm going to call the police, Shelly Miscavige would be out of there in 24 hours with probably a $10 million check to keep her fucking mouth shut. So I just don't have the same moral outrage about the Shelly Miscavige situation that some other people do. And that's fine. We don't all have to see it the same way. But, you know, she had a sweetheart job when she was CLB's assistant. She has a sweetheart job now. And the fact that she's disappeared from the public eye to me is meaningless because all no Sea Org members are in the public eye unless David Miscavige wants them to be. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. And I, you know, exactly. I don't want to disparage her or people that are very concerned, but, you know, it's not like she was an angel,
right.
The whole time. And I mean, she was married to Miscavige. I mean, she knew what she was getting into, with being at the head of Scientology. She has sort of, I don't know, taken on this sort of like heroic image or, you know what I mean? She's sort of been heroized by people. As
right.
a tragic figure, and you know, it's let's be clear. I mean, she's Miscavige is anyone that would marry him. I mean, I don't know what you were thinking, these like you know rumors or reports that the LAPD had actually spoken with her might genuinely be true.
It's possible that they're true, but it's also possible that they're not true. Mm. Like, there's no way. I can't say things so definitively like that. I would be shocked if a police officer showed up at the CST base and was permitted FaceTime with Shelly Miscavige. I'm sorry. Shelly has a legal right. Whatever. How do I want to describe this? Just because a police officer comes knocking on your door doesn't mean you have to go talk to them.
Right.
And unless these guys had a fucking warrant for Shelly, I don't see any reason they would have actually had a face-to-face visit. And the thing is, if they did have a face-to-face visit, why would the police say that's classified? That's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. That doesn't make any sense. But I guess my answer to you is it's possible that they did, and it's possible that they didn't.
If they didn't, what do you think is going on? Is it just, I mean, it's
I think the church
for cops to be in Scientology's pocket.
No. I think the church, I think the police don't have an obligation to get that FaceTime. I think, you know, the church, they do have protections, whether they're paying off people or not. There are inherent – the church has the same protections that anybody else has. And if I report someone missing, that doesn't mean the police have to go running around and absolutely – like, just because someone reports someone missing is not proof that they're missing. Do you see what I mean?
Right, yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
All the church has to do – and again, I'm no lawyer, but I would think that all the church would have to do is – just to prove that the report's not founded. Like, just because someone reports someone missing doesn't mean they're actually missing. Just because Leah hasn't heard from Shelly doesn't mean she's missing.
Right.
So I think the church – oops, hold on. I just dropped my phone. Are you still there?
Yeah. We're
okay.
Good. Don't worry about it.
If the police, you know, goes up to whatever church representative they went to and said, we've received this report, you'd think all the church would have to do is satisfy somehow that Shelly's not missing. Why would you say she's missing? But I find it hard to believe – that the police would have to get FaceTime before they settled the report. Now, the whole thing of them coming back and saying it's classified, yeah, that could be a result of, you know, pockets being lined. You know, I personally, if you ask my personal opinion,
yeah.
I think the church is just trying to fuck with Leah.
Really?
I think the church is gaslighting Leah. They just want to keep her making noise about Shelly because I think most Scientologists hear these things about Shelly and they sort of, they cast that as just bullshit. Mm. Like your average Scientologist is not wondering where Shelly Miscavige is, nor do they give a shit.
Right.
So I think it's an angle of attack that they're comfortable receiving. Like, the church is not made nervous by Leah saying, "Where's Shelley?" So if they can, right? And yeah. I think, cause David Miscavige is a little twisted, right? I feel like he's sitting there going, if I actually have to produce Shelley, then I'm letting, Leah know that she can control me.
Mm. Mm.
Like, if Leah can do A and cause David Miscavige to do B, then it looks like Leah has some impact over David Miscavige.
Right.
And I think David Miscavige is going to keep fucking around with Leah by refusing to produce Shelley. Just to say, you can't touch me. You can't make me do shit. That's what I think is going on.
And again, too, I mean, if you're focused on that and not, you know, the 300 other horrible things going on.
Yeah.
And maybe in the long run, it's like, cool. Yeah. Just focus on Shelley, who cares. And then it's like, if need be, she's over here. You know, she's been fine the whole time. She doesn't want to leave.
Exactly. And Leah has publicly said that she's had to spend a good deal of money on this whole Shelley Miscavige issue with lawyers and whatnot. So, right. You know, I think it's one of those ways, like you said, just kind of keeping her busy with stuff that doesn't really make them nervous.
Mm. Now, getting back a little bit to Miscavige himself, doesn't seem to make very many public appearances, less so now than he ever has in the past.
Right.
I want to say I saw maybe on Tony Ortega's blog, a fairly recent picture of him, again, at like some opening up some Scientology center somewhere, and he looked just looked like he had makeup on and just maybe even like he didn't look like the sort of older pictures of him. It looks like he's had work done or something. What, any sense of like him himself, like where is he? What's he doing? How is he never seen in public?
Well, just think about it for a second. Actually, I saw him in public a couple months ago.
Really? Okay. How did he look?
Oh, it's a really funny story. I was actually driving next to him on the street, and I fucked with him a bit. But let's think about his lifestyle for a moment, okay? Is Tom Cruise ever seen in public unless he wants to be?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the guy – so we're talking about Miscavige. He lives on a fortified base. He – right? He flies by private jet. He has chauffeured SUVs, and on every Sea Org base in the world, so on every continent almost, he has his own private little palace where he flies in private, gets shuttled in via blacked out SUV with security staff everywhere. Like, he doesn't go to the store.
Yeah,
he used to go to the movies, but I bet you he sure as hell doesn't do that anymore. When in LA or here at Clearwater, he would actually go to the movies with a bunch of his staff. He would go to the movie theater.
Just like a regular movie theater?
Just like a regular Joe.
Man of the people.
Yeah. But, he has no reason to be seen in public. And you know what? There's so much media. If he were to be seen in public, all it takes is one person throwing an egg or throwing a punch or whatever to create big problems. So a couple months ago, I was driving my car past – well, I said earlier that the Hacienda Gardens is where the Sea Org members here in Clearwater live, and it's just a mile down the street from me. And I was riding by, and the gate was open, and there was security staff on either side of the gate, and a really nice car pulled out. And I'm like, oh, that's got to be David Miscavige. So I slow down. I get in the same lane as him. Cause I drove by, he pulled out going the same direction I was going. So I got in the lane and I slowed down. This guy would not get within 50 feet of me. first of all, he was driving himself.
Really?
With his window down and smoking a cigarette. And I'm like, he must be so paranoid to not get in a fender bender, he won't get within 50 feet of a car. And we're on a street that's got a speed limit of like 45 miles an hour. I'm doing 20 because I'm trying to get him to catch up to me, right? I'm doing 20 and he will not get any closer to me.
Wow.
So I change lanes. I get into the left lane so that he'll speed up and he drives past me and I keep up with him. I'm looking over. I'm like, it's fucking David Miscavige. I'm like, in my whole time in Scientology, I've never been this close to David Miscavige. Hmm. And he's got two security cars trailing him. And I'm like, well, this is a joke. So I cut off his security cars. And so now I'm driving right behind him. And I'm like, you know what? You security guys aren't doing a great job, are you? Because look at me. I'm a big bad SP and I'm driving behind David Miscavige. And then I pull up next to him again, and I'm looking in the window, and his security cars are pulling up next to me, looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing? And I followed his car all the way to the superpower building, where he had a garage, you know, the garage door where like the big trucks deliver the food for the mess and everything. Where he had, you know, security guys all waiting for him, and, you know, he just pulls in and jumps out and the door closes. And I'm like, okay, well, clearly he's someone who wants to be a big shot and have good security. But at the same time, I'm just Aaron Smith Levin, and I'm right. Like fucking with him, just, you know, whatever. I think a lot of the work that it looks like he's had done is Photoshop.
Really? Okay.
I mean, you know, but look, Tom Cruise also looks like he's had work done recently as far as fillers or whatever, or Botox or whatever. And it would not surprise me in the least if Miscavige is getting the Botox and the tanning and maybe some fillers. I do not believe he would actually get plastic surgery. Mm. I think Scientologists in general are a little paranoid of going under general anesthesia. Because it's considered engramic.
Right, okay.
You know, like LRH was very paranoid about going to the dentist for some reason.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah.
Right. And it's not impossible that Miscavige would get work done. It just seems unlikely to me because, you know, usually it's so obvious when someone has work done, and Scientologists would consider it weird if it looked like Miscavige had plastic surgery.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, exactly.
Like, I'm sorry, like, you're a SEER member. Why the fuck do you care about what your face looks like so much, you know?
Yeah, you're supposed to be clearing the planet, not
exactly
about physical appearance.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I did see some photos last year where he looked straight up ill. He looked
right? That's what I thought, he looked sick or something.
Yeah,
he was wearing makeup to kind of make himself look, I don't know, healthier or something. He looked ill, yeah.
He looked really gaunt. He looked very old. Mm. And in the more recent photos, he actually looked better. And I just don't know how much of that is health related and how much of that is Photoshop related. Who knows?
Right. No, exactly. And I mean, you know, if you're the head of Scientology, you're probably going to look sick a lot of the time.
Yeah. But just imagine how stressed out and paranoid and he must be on a regular basis.
Oh, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Everyone's out to get me. Everyone around me is a failure. I've got to do everything myself, you know. Never knowing who you can trust because you're such a terrible person to people, and you know that's not a good way to live.
No, and he seems to, you know, continually kind of like isolated himself from everybody.
Exactly.
You know, and again, like you said, taking on more work. You know, he wants to kind of control everything himself.
Right.
You know, doesn't want to delegate. Aaron. This is sort of like switching subjects a little bit, but it's sort of like, you know, you it's like a car crash. You gotta look at it. Donald Trump has had some interesting connections with Scientology, as has Bill Clinton and as well. But I'm sure you've seen some of these pictures of Trish Duggan,
yeah,
with Donald Trump, and also with Newt Gingrich, Newt Gingrich's wife as well.
Yeah.
Anything on that? I mean, I know that people, of course, because Trump is such a horrible psychopath, people do like to, you know, make the comparisons between, you know, L. Ron Hubbard and Donald Trump, and I know he's close with the what is it, Attorney General down in Florida,
who's Pam Bondi.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But again, you know, Bill Clinton was meeting with Scientologists and did a lot to pave the way. You know, for Scientology, you know, like after the tax exempt status, and you know, he intervened in Germany and a bunch of other places. But what do you make of the Trish Duggan stuff?
So, here's the thing. well, first of all, Bob Duggan's a billionaire, and his wife is no dummy, and you know, it doesn't surprise me in the bit. I mean, money is king. The cash is king. I think Scientologists lean more Republican than Democrat overall.
Okay.
But the Scientology community is certainly still split on this issue. I mean, the ex-Scientology community is most certainly split on this issue of, you know, Trump versus Clinton. You know, Trump doesn't give a shit about Scientology. There's no way that he does.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't believe really a thing that he says. I mean, he's not a Christian, but it doesn't keep him from pretending like he is. So the fact that, you know, what I don't know is actually whether Trish and Bob Duggan how close they are to the Gingrich family. Mm-hmm. Or who else did they get a photo with? Was it just
Conway?
Was it really? Oh, you see, that doesn't surprise me at all, because look, here's what everyone should remember. Greta Van Susteren and her husband are diehard Scientologists. Yes. Greta's husband is a very powerful DC attorney. Mm. You know, you might not have ever heard his name. I don't even think I could think of his name off the top of my head. Mm. And Greta's no slouch herself. You know what I mean?
She's a very high-powered lawyer. So, back in the day.
And we already know that Greta leans right. Okay. We already know she supports Trump over Clinton. And we already know, I mean, Greta and her husband were very, very, very close with Sarah Palin. Like,
really?
Personally close. Like, confidant close. Right? So, that's not a function, though, of Scientology. That's a function of money and power and influence. It's not a function of Scientology. Now, it's got a trickle-down effect of giving Scientology some prominence because, you know, if Palin loves Greta and her husband, and if the Gingriches love Greta and her husband, then by extension, Scientology must be great. But, you know, like you said, the Clintons are the ones that helped with the tax-exempt status anyway. Like, it's not a Republican-Democrat issue. It's a money issue. It's a money, power, and influence issue. And so, you know, I think Scientologists, definitely more Scientologists support Trump than don't. But even if it was a Clinton in the White House, it's not like – if Trump being in the White House is positive for Scientology, it doesn't mean that Clinton being in the White House would have been a negative for Scientology, you know?
Right. I mean, it does seem like, again, just part of a larger kind of concerted effort that's been going on for years with Scientology to get close to politicians if they can.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And that's like, you know, all cults at some point try to – you know, like this is totally off topic, but – a lot of people, you know, talking about Tulsi Gabbard as a congresswoman, I think, from Hawaii, who is, you know, just going to, she does say some great thing, you know, we should stop bombing the Middle East and, you know, the war in Syria is this horrible thing and we shouldn't be taking sides in this. And people just don't want to talk about the fact that she comes from a very, very creepy, weird offshoot of the Hare Krishna cult.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it's just like one of these, like, nothing to see here, folks. You don't have to, you know, don't look into her past. Don't look into the fact that her chief of staff is a high-level member of this group and everyone around her is part of this group. And it does, you know, you do kind of wonder, like, is there an ulterior motive to all of this, you know, in elevating her? And I'm sure there's other politicians you can name that have, you know, had various relationships with Scientologists in the past.
Right.
You know, that's just sort of like a... I don't know, par for the course, I guess. When it comes to this, do you like just going back again though to Miscavige and what's going on? Any sense? I mean, I know this is like an incredibly difficult question to answer, but any kind of thoughts like what's you know how does Scientology move forward from everything that's been happening? You know, we've spoken with Jeffrey Augustine before. We did a whole episode talking about the Nation of Islam, you know, and the Louis Farrakhan, and you know, again, just to get people in the door, you know, bodies and stats and things like that, requiring NOI members to take auditing and things like that. You know, anything now like that you can see or that you've heard of in terms of like saving face, if it's even possible.
Well, when you say how do they move forward, do we mean how do they continue to exist, or how do they grow, or how do they change, or all of it?
Well, I guess all of it, but I mean we can break that down. I mean how do they continue being, you know, how does Scientology as an institution continue?
Well, when you consider that they own all of their properties outright and they don't have any mortgages and they've got $3 billion of assets, they don't really have to do or change anything in order to be able to continue to exist. Right? Their membership can continue to dwindle and they're going to continue to exist. They have almost, their overhead is very low. And, you know, it only takes a small number of Scientologists in the world to generate enough revenue to pay the bills. I'd have to say their asset accumulation phase has probably come to an end. I think they're probably at a maintenance phase at this point. But even if they took their $3 billion and invested it, they could, even without any parishioners, probably generate enough revenue to keep the lights on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
and so I don't think Scientology's going anywhere. unless there's some sort of a large class action lawsuit that hits them with meaningful damages, meaningful punitive damages that, you know, greatly reduces their asset base. As far as – so that's kind of like what do they have to do to continue to exist. They don't have to do anything to continue to exist, in my opinion. And I think they're legally protected in a way that they can shift their assets around in a way that even a large damages ruling or whatever judgment.
They could still save their money.
Yeah, they could figure out a way to get out of it, I think, you know. Okay, so but here's the other answer to this question. They would only have to change one or two things just a little bit, and they probably would hardly lose anybody. You know, people get into Scientology and stay in Scientology for as long as they do because they find value in it. You have to treat people pretty terribly to outweigh the value people find in Scientology. You have to treat people pretty badly to give them a reason to leave. I do think it is David Miscavige's psychosis that has allowed the treatment of people in Scientology to become so poor. David Miscavige might be operating off of the same policies that L. Ron Hubbard was operating off of, but David Miscavige is doing it in a different way. Now, realize everything I'm saying here, I'm not advocating for people to join Scientology. I'm not advocating for people to stay in Scientology. And no matter what changes they made, I sure as hell would never go back to Scientology. But if they were being smart, they would only have to change a couple things, and nobody would leave. Like, people don't care what is said about their religion. People don't leave a religion because of shit people say about it, you know? You have to actually treat people badly in order to make them leave. So if they would just ease up a bit on the disconnection policy.
Right.
Right? And here's what I mean by ease up on it. So, like, my mother-in-law has a son who's not a Scientologist. He hates Scientology. Mm. But he's not allowed to talk to me, my wife, or my kids because Scientology is telling my mother-in-law that if your son, if your non-Scientologist son talks to Aaron and Heather, then you're connected to Aaron and Heather. So if your non-Scientologist son talks to Aaron and Heather, you're going to have to disconnect from your non-Scientologist son, or he's going to have to if he doesn't disconnect from Aaron and Heather. That's insane!
Yeah.
Right? That's insane. Now, let me carry on this example. My mother-in-law has a sister who's not a Scientologist. And for some reason, she's allowed to talk to us. She's allowed to talk to us, but my mother-in-law's son is not. And I'm like, if you would just stop fucking with people's lives, like if you would just say, if you being connected to person B who's connected to person C doesn't make you connected to person C, then life would become easier for Scientologists. Scientologists disconnect from people not because they feel a moral obligation to do so, but because they are ordered to do so.
Right.
If the church would just stop ordering so much disconnection, life would continue to be livable under the umbrella of Scientology. And management is making life unlivable for too many of its people. And that's something they're doing to themselves. So that's one thing. If they would just ease up on their current interpretation of the policies regarding disconnection and what it means to be connected to a suppressive person, that would be an important change. If they would make life a little easier for Sea Org members, right? And I don't mean work less hours and I don't mean pay them more money. I mean, when Christmas time comes, let people go see their family. How about when Thanksgiving time comes, maybe you could give them 2 hours for dinner instead of 30 minutes,
right?
I'm talking about small changes. I'm talking about let someone have a day off every other week, right? Nobody would leave the Sea Org, I'm telling you. Because it relieves the pressure enough that you're willing to put up with a lot more shit for a lot longer. If you can just get a little pressure relief every now and then, right? Okay, so that is something that Scientology could do to at least stop losing people. I don't believe – okay, how could they possibly ever expand again? You know what? Scientology, I think, embarrasses itself more with its lies than it does with its practices. All religions do stupid shit, right? But in the Catholic Church, when people started to complain about children being molested, the church didn't put up fucking hate websites about the people making the complaints.
Right, right. Right. Oh, no, yeah, they might have covered it up, but they're not, you know.
Right, right. So, you know, if the church would just stop lying about the stuff it does, I think the public at large would just sort of keep driving by instead of, you know, like, fine, Scientology, Christianity, like any other religion, but at least other religions own their shit, you know. Yes, I'm going to make some generalities here. The Mormons and their magic underwear. You don't hear the Mormon church denying the magic temple underwear. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's fucking weird.
Yes,
but the church doesn't lie about it. They own it. They're like, look, if that's important enough to you, that it's in your scripture and it's part of your practices, if you at least own it, you don't look like a liar. You might be weird, but you're not a liar. And that's why I'm saying I think the church gets more bad press for its lies than it does its practices. When they take Mary and David Kahn, who were in episode 5 of Leah's show, and they get the son to do a video that says, my parents disconnected from me, not the other way around. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah,
you're just lying, right? So I guess that was my answer to, if Scientology would just own its practices, I think it would sort of enter this category of stuff where it's like someone can make up their own mind as to whether they want to participate in that or not. But if you become known for lying about what you do, it's almost impossible for somebody to make up their mind about whether they want to participate in it or not, because you just look like a fraud.
Right.
Just own your shit. And I think if they eased up on the disconnection and if they just stopped lying about what their policies are, I don't know. I think it's got a slight chance of maybe in the future being able to return to some sort of growth phase. But, you know, it's not something I'm interested in helping them do. Like,
No.
I don't really care one way or the other, you know?
Why do you think they don't ease up on the disconnection? Particularly now where it's, you know, everybody has now heard of disconnection.
I know you've
spoken with Mike Grinder, you know, that the forced abortions has sort of eased off. That's not, you know, that's no longer, like official policy. You know, and they're not pressuring women to have abortions. I'm sure it still happens, but it's not on like a wide scale thing. But why with the disconnection?
I believe the single answer is David Miscavige. I do think he is a sociopath. I do think he's not quite right. And I think that for him personally, he knows. So disconnection is an effort to stop the flow of information. Okay. I think there's two goals with disconnection. One, to stop the flow of information. And two, to make leaving the church so painful that people don't want to leave the church. Okay. Now let's talk about the information that, disconnection is trying to stop. David Miscavige knows that the word on the street isn't how terrible Scientology is, it's how terrible David Miscavige is.
Right.
No, he's right?
Become the story.
He's become the story, so he won't be the guy, especially because he's a fucking sociopath. He won't be the guy that's like, you know what we really should do, guys? We should make life easier for Scientologists by letting everybody talk to their declared family members. Because he's going to be the topic of the conversation that he's trying to stop. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And if David Miscavige were to die, and if Scientology was being run by a committee of fair-minded people, I think you would see something like disconnection be eased up or canceled. I mean, it's hard to say for sure what would happen. I just feel like the answer to the question, why isn't it happening, is David Miscavige.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what about the I mean, this is like almost like a silly question, but I mean, just what the public figures in Scientology, your celebrities, Trish Duggan, the Duggan family, these sort of people, how do they just kind of go about this like nothing is happening? You know, I know like there are more and more people breaking away, average people. There's more celebrities. You know, there's like the Giovanni Ribisi's daughter. He might have even left Scientology as well. I know there are rumors about that. But, you know, like, how are these people just sort of going about, like, it's not happening? I mean, or is that just sort of the ingrained mindset of a true believer?
So there's two answers. So one way to answer this question is that you have to remember that Scientology is not just a cute thing to do in the minds of a Scientologist. And my video that's called The Matrix, Fundamentalist Scientology and Disconnection does a pretty good job of explaining just how important Scientologists consider the mission of Scientology to be. It's not just let's make people feel better. It's not just let's clean up parks or let's help people be friendly to each other. They truly believe that they are engaged in a very serious battle to free every person on this planet from a mental and spiritual prison that has been created here that people have been stuck in for trillions of years without knowing it. Like, they feel that the mission of Scientology is that important that it is not possible for anything else to be more important than the mission of Scientology. Okay. I talked about that in my video. And then Leah, in her podcast with Joe Rogan, does a very, very good job of – gives a very good explanation of how celebrities and influential people like Bob and Trish and Greta and Greta's husband are put into bubbles that shield them from all of the negative information that they could get about Scientology. So on the one hand, a lot of these powerful people or famous people trying to get – truly don't know. But on the other hand, if any of that information were to seep through, they're already proofed up against information like that based on what they believe the mission of Scientology is. And based on their understanding or their belief that the media in general exists solely to create chaos and havoc and disagreement and turmoil, and that the media has a vested interest in destroying Scientology. So they're already proofed up against such information, if any of that information were to seep through in the first place. Someone like Greta, it is truly hard to understand how someone like her, who's exposed, you'd have to think that she already knows everything that's out there in the media about Scientology. It's truly hard to understand how she remains in the fold. She's one that's harder for me to explain. But when it comes to Kirstie Alley, Tom Cruise, John Travolta, Giovanni Ribisi, and personally, I have high hopes that Giovanni is sort of moving away from the church. I have very high hopes. I do not necessarily believe that Giovanni would disconnect from his daughter. And, his daughter has less Scientology. But you know, Giovanni's got a new TV show and Scientology is going to try to keep its hooks into him as hard as possible. But I have high hopes there. So did I answer that question?
Yeah, no. I think that's as good an answer as you could give on a topic like this. Well, you know, we got about 10 minutes left here. Aaron, quickly, where do you think Scientology is going to go in the next couple of years? And is there anything that you want to, you know, that we haven't touched on in this conversation that you want to mention or make a note of?
Well, let's see. I think in the next couple of years, people joining Scientology, if it hasn't come to a complete standstill, is very likely to do so. People leaving Scientology is just going to increase. And I think, those two things, whether they actually have any impact on the survival potential of the church itself is kind of irrelevant. Like, just because the church exists doesn't mean it has influence. I think the group has influence to the degree that it has members who are influential. And I think its membership is dwindling. And so the influence of its membership is dwindling. And I almost don't even care how much money they're able to, how much interest they're able to make off of their reserves. They're just going to become a shell of an organization.
Yes.
I think people within Scientology who still believe in the technology of Scientology will just more and more practice the subject outside of the restrictions of the church. And I think that is eventually where Scientology will wind up, is just in the hands of people for free who want to use it as sort of a self-help subject and a self-help tool. And it won't really be a religion. It'll be, ironically, what L. Ron Hubbard said in the beginning it would be, which is just an applied religious philosophy.
Right. It's like the early Dianetics, you know, where
exactly.
It spread out and everyone started doing it, you know, privately.
Exactly. And as far as I'm concerned, that's where something like that belongs. Scientology is not an organized religion, and it's not a real religion. And it is just sort of an applied, I always thought that applied philosophy described Scientology pretty accurately. But the moment you call it a religion, you start getting, you know, very weird about it. And, you know, I think, anything I would want to say is just along the lines of, you know, my intention in everything I'm doing is not to make people feel like they're wrong for being in Scientology or to make people feel guilty of anything or to even get the church shut down. For me, this is really just an effort to have an open and honest conversation. I find those things interesting. I find debates interesting. I think the more the church fights the truth, the more interesting I find speaking the truth. Like, if the church would just come out and own all of the shit that it's lying about, I think I'd probably no longer feel a need to keep talking about it. Yeah, I mean, it's really just the open and honest discourse and the debate that that I enjoy. And, you know, what I would feel like would be a very acceptable result in all of this is if it was no longer legal for a minor to join the Sea Org or for a minor to join staff or – I don't know if it's even possible to say a minor couldn't receive auditing. Do you know what I mean? Right. Because I don't know, a minor can receive, you know, a therapy, right? I think, right? So, but I think if changes were to be implemented to the effect that you could not be a Sea Org member until you were 18 or you could not join staff until you were 18, then at least we kind of move this whole subject, into the realm where only someone slightly rather capable of making an informed decision is capable of making that decision. You know, it's really joining staff and joining the Sea Org that ends up really fucking up children's lives. Just being a Scientologist and doing some courses and getting some auditing, as long as you're still living a normal life and getting an education and living in the real world, you know, you don't really get hurt that way. The kids that I know that have suffered due to their experience are the ones that were raised in the Sea Org or joined the Sea Org at a very young age and were exposed to nothing else, or joined staff at a very young age and were exposed to nothing else. And, you know, kids should not be making those kind of decisions to forego an education and forego, you know, career goals to work for slave wages for a church. You know what I'm saying? That's how I feel. That's probably what I'd say.
Yeah, right. You know, on that very quickly, I mean, that raises the question of, like, you know, if Scientology kind of makes all of these changes and things like that, is it still a dangerous organization?
You know, I don't think so.
I think it's – then you get into the realm of, like, you know, is it a destructive cult or is it just a cult, you know, and sort of parsing that out, because there is a bit of a difference.
Well, so let me clarify. When I say I don't think so, I think the question I was really answering, is it more dangerous than what? Is it more dangerous than something else? A lot of debate can be had on the difference between a cult and a, quote, real religion. You have religions, and then you have the fundamentalist aspects of those religions. I have said in one of my videos, the one I mentioned, that I referenced fundamentalist Scientology, and some of the heat that I took on that video was, oh, there's no such thing as fundamentalist Scientology because by definition all Scientology is fundamentalist. Well, I disagree. I'm sorry. I disagree. Any body of knowledge can be applied sensibly or it can be applied in a fundamentalist way. It's in the eye of the beholder. So when you say, is it still a dangerous organization? We'd have to define what is it that makes Scientology a dangerous organization. Now, I know that there are experts out there like Steve Hassan, who I think make credible arguments for why the practices of Scientology are in fact dangerous. I cannot say that I've very thoroughly examined those arguments or am in a position to really debate them. And if I were to debate them, I'd love to do it with Steve himself. But, you know, it's like, okay, if we were to define what it is about Scientology that makes it dangerous, I would also need to compare it to how does that compare to Mormonism or the Jehovah's Witnesses or certain sects of Christianity, because I don't hear any public discussion about whether those are dangerous.
Oh, Aaron, we're coming up on the break right now, or the end of the show, excuse me. Quickly, where can people go to listen and watch your videos?
So the YouTube channel is just Growing Up in Scientology, and easily recognizable because you'll see the videos of me and Mike Rinder. We've got 5 videos up there so far. And then I've got a bunch of videos on there with Nick Lister, whose mom was featured in Going Clear.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Aaron, we'll have to have you back on the show soon to discuss some more Scientology stuff. It's always a pleasure having you. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
All right, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology, they have all these great things that they're gonna do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network and we just need that so much.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park, and when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round, it has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real, or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride, and we kill those people. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.